50, located directly below the massive structure, Sudan is most exposed to any mismanagement, making daily coordination and transparency essential.
The matter doesn't end with this inauguration. Sudan and Egypt must take a strong stance to protect their rights through all legitimate means. As observers, we should put forward realistic, workable solutions. In my view, the only practical path is genuine joint management of the dam, where every decision is made collectively by all three countries.
Just hours after the inauguration, Egypt addressed the UN Security Council, emphasizing that it will not recognize Ethiopia's unilateral control over Nile waters and reaffirming the importance of international law. Previous trilateral talks among Ethiopia, Sudan, and Egypt failed to produce a binding agreement, leaving the dispute unresolved. Sudan, for its part, has reiterated its rejection of unilateral measures in the Nile Basin and remains committed to pursuing diplomatic channels to safeguard its national interests.
Standing here by the Nile, Sudan's lifeline, the concerns are clear. Beyond the promises of electricity and flood control, the real question is whether Ethiopia's dam will bring cooperation or deepen the uncertainty downstream. Abdullah Hussein, Khartoum.
Of the continuous genocide in Gaza by the Israeli occupation, many took to the streets of New York City to condemn the relentless and open field bombing campaigns that have now left nearly 65,000 killed. Protesters held banners calling for the freedom of Palestine and the end of the forced starvation of its people as they marched the busy streets chanting for an end to the occupation by Israeli forces.
To tell the world that this is a complete hypocrisy because they want to uphold international laws for other people, but when it comes to Gaza, absolutely no response. And we deserve to be treated like normal human beings, just like every other person, and everybody deserves basic human rights.
Protesters are demanding that the Israeli occupation be sanctioned and an arms embargo be put in place, especially after the IOF has called for the evacuation of Gaza under the guise of so-called safe zones. This comes after the genocide is nearing 2 years and the people of New York are saying and they demand an immediate ceasefire.
Appraisals were heard among the crowd for the global Sumud flotilla, which Israel has already attacked in Tunisia, as a flock of boats made their way to Gaza to break the imposed siege, while some protesters expressed hope in persevering until the siege is broken.
We have reached the point where Israel has turned the world into such a place where those who try to bring food are treated as criminals. While those who try to bring sieges are treated as villains. And while those who orchestrate and lead genocides like Benjamin Netanyahu are treated with respect, are welcomed into the halls of international diplomacy.
I am seeing a slight shift, towards the better. It's going to be a tough fight. We're going to fight harder. We're just going to keep fighting harder just to throw out our message that eventually Palestine will be free, and we need to save Gaza. We need to save Gaza now. No one is free unless Gaza is free.
With the UN General Assembly approaching in a week, people are already preparing to protest war criminal Benjamin Netanyahu's arrival to New York, while the international community continues to stay silent. Rachel Hamdouin, New York.
London's Genesis Cinema, a packed hall, watches From Ground Zero, a series of 22 short films by as many directors spanning fiction, documentary, and animation. Made by young filmmakers inside Gaza as the Israeli genocide unfolds, the collection captures fragments of daily life in the territory.
For so many years, I was making Palestinian stories into cinema and showing them all over the world. For sure, when something like this happening, I need to share these stories with the world. I need to show what's going on in the small details of their life, far from the news.
One film shows the effects of Israel's starvation campaign. Another, musicians and vocalists refusing to surrender joy, and another, a husband remembering his last phone call to his wife and children before they were killed by Israel. Together, they show audiences the devastation, the heartache, and the determination of a people who continue to create.
The message I kind of take with me is that the children, no matter how much they're suffering, they are still able to tell stories of hope and to get over this. And I think within the sadness of it all, losing people, losing your home and everything, your identity, your being a Palestinian is what keeps them going.
I felt closer to the people that are actually in Palestine, especially because we actually heard names. So it's not just numbers. And I think it's very important to people know the actual names of the people that are there.
The films have already been shown at international festivals to rapturous applause.
The screening feels like more than cinema. It is a reminder that storytelling is an act of survival, with the directors insisting that their voices be heard. For the Palestinian diaspora, this is a bridge. For others, a chance to witness lives that are often reduced to headlines, demonized and dehumanized.
I think in spite of the darkness, the grief, the sadness that the film shows, you also get a perspective of hope. No matter what's happening, these are people who are attached to a land. These are people who are surviving colonialism. They're enduring a genocide. The easy option is walk out, get your freedom. But it's not freedom. It's removal from what's part of your culture. You might stay alive, but are you living if you're not on the land that it means more to you?
Supported by award-winning American director Michael Moore, From Ground Zero offers no easy answers, but it proves that even in the harshest of circumstances, art endures. Saeed Pourreza, London.
Twenty-four years after 9/11, a three-day conference was held in Washington called Turning the Tide, 9/11 Justice in 2025. 9/11 dissenters agree on a few core precepts. The official narrative is false. The World Trade Centers were demolished by pre-planned explosions, and not only the airplanes. The attack occurred with the complicity of U.S. officials, and that 9/11 was pre-planned as a pretext for war abroad and a democratic rollback in the United States.
I think as time goes on, we get further away from the event, so people are less, feel a little less, say, traumatized. Younger generations start to look at the event. We do get, you know, new evidence comes about, and just in general, the taboo of questioning 9/11 starts to fade.
As we look at our world today, we're seeing more false flags, more lies, more stuff happening. These wars are endless. So unless we stand up and do something, the world's going to, I believe, go spiral down even more. So it's like what I say is we have a choice. It's either silence and complicity, or it's doing something about it.
After 9/11, Western governments forced through unparalleled spy regimes, waged mass discrimination campaigns against their Muslim citizens, and fomented a hysterical war climate which largely endures today.
If 9/11 was perpetrated by Al-Qaeda, then why did Washington, Israel, and the West support the armed takeover of Syria by a longtime Al-Qaeda member less than a year ago? One wonders how the 3,000 people killed 24 years ago would react to this support for the alleged perpetrators of 9/11. If you look back at history, Al-Qaeda has been, you know, Al-Qaeda and Islamic extremists in general have been useful to the U.S. when, you know, either as soldiers or as boogeymen, you know, they could play either role for the U.S. And so I think this and many other things, you know, I would say many 9/11 families have questioned the official story for many years, and many are still fighting for justice.
A study from Brown University in the United States found that post-9/11 wars are responsible for the deaths of over 4.5 million people.
You're trying to get evidence, you're trying to get truth, and, you know, when someone is murdered, you normally have a murder trial. There's normally some degree of process to help that healing process, and we just haven't been given that.
Late last month, a federal judge determined that Saudi Arabia can face a civil lawsuit alleging the kingdom sponsored, aided, and supported the attack. 15 of the 19 hijackers were from Saudi Arabia. Ramin Mazahiri, Washington, D.C.
Eternal Echoes of the Farsi-speaking World was the slogan of an event to celebrate the Farsi language in Vienna on Thursday evening. Hosted by the Iranian embassy, the event was held at the premises of the Diplomatic Society magazine.
It was a great opportunity to focus on the beauty of Persian language and also addressing some of very important topics relating to this language. We commemorate also Hafez Shirazi, one of the greatest poets of Iran and Persia, indeed. And also we addressed the Cyrus the Great and his efforts and his legacy, and especially the Cyrus Cylinder, which is considered as the first human rights declaration all over the world.
It was the fourth time this annual joint event was organized by Iran with the embassies of Afghanistan and Tajikistan. Ambassadors and diplomats from many countries attended, like Oman, Democratic People's Republic of Korea, and Russia.
This evening is not merely a celebration of language, but of a civilization expressed through words. Farsi is more than a medium of communication. It's a repository of philosophy, spirituality, and art.
Tonight we have gathered in this beautiful garden in Villa Flora to pay tribute to these two towering figures of the Persian-speaking world, Hafiz, the poet of timeless wisdom, and Cyrus the Great, the visionary leader and founder of the Persian Empire.
Music from the three Farsi-speaking countries was performed, handicrafts were displayed, and the attendees enjoyed traditional food. This was the second cultural and religious event of the embassy in 3 days. On Tuesday, they celebrated the birth anniversary of Prophet Muhammad on their premises.
It has been another very successful event showcasing the Iranian culture, organized by the Iranian embassy. This is testimony for the growing interest in the country's history, language, and religion in Austria. Another opportunity to display Iranian technology will be at the country's pavilion at the UN headquarters next week. Dieter Reinisch, Vienna.
To be part of Islam, heart of a Muslim.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints. The birthday of Muhammad, peace be upon him and his progeny, marks the greatest celebration in history. 2016. Imam Khamenei. After the passage of 3 years or more in the first phase of Bi'tha, the Holy Prophet ﷺ had managed to convert 30 or 40 people to Islam through his covert call to Islam. Then a divine order was issued, therefore declare openly that thou art commanded, and turn away from the polytheists. The Holy Quran, chapter 15, verse 94. Requiring the Holy Prophet ﷺ to raise flag of Islam and to openly call people to Islam. The Holy Prophet ﷺ did so, being concerned about the safety of the Holy Prophet and his enemies' plots. Abi Talib went to him and told him the message of the chiefs of Mecca. Dear uncle, even if they place the sun in my right hand and the moon in my left hand to prevent me from achieving this goal, I swear by Allah that I will not do as they say. The Holy Prophet replied. Then the Prophet's eyes were filled with tears and he got up to leave. Having observed this faith and steadfastness, Abi Talib was impressed and said, "Dear nephew, go and say whatever you like." He told him to pursue his goal. "I swear by God that I will not give you away, no matter what I receive in return." This steadfastness bred more steadfastness. This steadfastness on the part of the Holy Prophet ﷺ strengthened the roots of steadfastness in the heart of Abi Talib. Pursuing the goals, not fearing the enemy, not being tempted by what the enemy has to offer, and not being dependent on the privileges that the enemy offers to prevent one from treading the path one believes in, give rise to resistance, peace, trust in the path, the goal, and God who this goal belongs to. There were not more than 30 or 40 of them. These 30 or 40 people tolerated all those hardships and increased in number on a daily basis. Each day, they were witness to what they did to Ammar and Bilal. They were witness to the torturing and martyrdom of Sumayya and Yasir. They were witness to these things, but they still converted to Islam. That is the way righteousness is promoted. The mere rising of the flag in peace and security will not help promote righteousness. Righteousness will be promoted only when there is steadfastness and perseverance on the part of righteous people who believe in righteousness.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The New York Declaration, hailed by its architect as a roadmap to peace, has ignited fierce controversy over its treatment of Palestinian rights. While 142 nations endorsed the resolution at the UN General Assembly, critics argue that its emphasis on disarming Hamas and excluding it from governance, coupled with vague commitments to Palestinian sovereignty, masks a deeper failure to confront the realities of occupation, displacement and systemic inequality. By prioritizing geopolitical optics and appeasing Western narratives, the declaration risks entrenching the very injustices it claims to resolve. I am Bahman Nouri, and in tonight's Spotlight, we ask, does this document represent a genuine step towards justice or a diplomatic sleight of hands that sidelines the Palestinian struggle? Let us begin with a short report.
Amid rising tensions across West Asia and the genocide in Gaza, the UN General Assembly has adopted a text endorsing a landmark declaration concerning the realization of an independent state of Palestine. The measure is known as the New York Declaration. 142 members voted in favor of it, 10 against, and 12 countries abstained from the vote, including Iran, Iraq, and Tunisia. The declaration, which was already endorsed by the Arab League, seeks to fully exclude Hamas from leadership in Gaza. Iran's UN mission has listed the reasons why it did not vote in favor of the resolution.
The statement fails to adequately address the root causes of the crisis in the West Asia region and does not provide a realistic solution to end the prolonged conflict. The statement ignores the reality of the Zionists' presence in Palestinian territories and their ongoing occupation. The statement irresponsibly shares the responsibility for continuing this long tragedy, equally between the apartheid occupying regime and the people under occupation. The statement's attempt to condemn the Palestinian right to legitimate defense on October 7, 2023, and justify the disproportionate and horrific crimes of the Israeli regime against Palestinians in response to this right is utterly unacceptable and strongly rejected.
Iran's UN mission stressed that lasting peace in the region can only be achieved through the establishment of an independent, sovereign Palestinian state. The UNGA resolution also called for the disarmament of Palestinian resistance groups. Hamas and other groups say this contradicts international law, which recognizes the rights of the people under occupation. The UN General Assembly's vote came less than 24 hours after Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said there would never be a Palestinian state. The New York Declaration vote precedes the upcoming UN summit co-chaired by Riyadh and Paris on September 22 in New York. French President Emmanuel Macron and several other leaders have promised to formally recognize the Palestinian state during the summit. Around three-quarters of the 193 UN member states recognize the Palestinian state proclaimed in 1988 by the exiled Palestinian leadership.
Welcome back. Allow me to get into the conversation with Saeb Shahz, author and West Asia expert, who is with me right now from Belfast. Very good to have you, Mr. Shahz. It's a pleasure to have you on the program. I want to talk to you about, let's go to the heart of the matter. Do you think this declaration's failure to explicitly condemn Israeli occupation and blockade, do you think this kind of violates international legal norms under the Fourth Geneva Convention?
It does, since the responsibility of an occupying power, according to the Geneva Convention and its annexes, is to protect the occupied land and not to change any of its landmarks, not to change its demography, not to mistreat the civilians. And then we have the International Court of Justice in The Hague had an opinion which is came out last year calling the Zionist entities presence in the occupied West Bank or Gaza Strip or Jerusalem, East Jerusalem, is illegal, and listed all the illegalities and asked the Zionist entity and the international community and the state actors and non-state actors to help in dismantling the occupation in the West Bank. So once we talk about the West Bank and the Gaza Strip and East Jerusalem, every aspect of that is illegal under international law. And there is in here contradiction with what the United Nations vote for and General Assembly or demanding the Palestinian people to do. We must pay attention to the declaration when it orders the Palestinians, and especially Hamas, who is an elected government by the Palestinian people, and that the one who overseen these elections was the former President Jimmy Carter of the United States of America. So when they asked them, Hamas must end its role in Gaza and have and hand over its weapons to the Palestinian Authority. And they say this is in line with the objective of the sovereign and independent Palestinian state. And let me just dismantle that little bit here for you. We have, as Palestinian people, experience with something which they are building on it. In here, they called at the time, they call it the Fahd Peace Plan, which is known after that, the Fahd Peace Initiative. And that, and right. Then they called it the Fez Initiative, since it was a proposal went for the Arab League Summit in 1982 in Morocco, in the city of Fez. And the Saudi Crown Prince then, Fahd, he is presented that, and they this in that 1981 they disagreed upon there because they exclude the Palestinian PLO as representative of from the whole thing, and then they call for the solution to have Palestinian independent state in the West Bank and Gaza Strip and Jerusalem right. as a capital, while they recognizing for free the Zionist entity is swallowing the risk of historical Palestine. After that, what happened? The Zionist entity went and occupied Lebanon in 1982, and they declared after that they control most of Lebanon. The international community, led at the time by the American President Reagan, sent their own diplomats to broker kind of agreement, the PLO, to leave Lebanon in 1982. And the PLO agreed that since it is not Palestinian territory, but with a kind of agreement with the Americans to protect the Palestinian refugee camps, Sabra and Shatila, for example, in here, they agreed with the Americans and the French, and the American and the French deployed 2,000 soldiers to protect the Palestinian refugee camps in Sabra and Shatila. And once the PLO, the Palestinian, left Lebanon in there, what happens? 4 days later, these forces left, withdrawn from the refugee camps. Suddenly, Sharon, the defense minister of the Zionist entity, sent in the Lebanese forces and the Lebanese phalange under the supervision of the supposed to be Zionists and the peacekeepers, American and French, slaughtered all the Palestinians in there. And that was the agreement, the signature of the President of the United States of America, Jimmy Carter, and the French President at the time as well. So how the Palestinian will accept and will believe the international community when they ask them to hand over their weapons, while the top leadership of the West...
We are going to, of course, cover those because we have a lot of questions. I would really appreciate it if you kept the answers more briefly. I wanted to talk exactly, we're going to talk about the disarmament as well. Well, you know that several Arab countries and also Iran abstained from the vote. And the reasons, some of them, especially the Iranian envoy, vocally criticized this declaration for failing to address the root causes of the West Asia crisis. Does its focus on short-term stabilization and disarmament offer a realistic path to peace? Or do you think it merely treats the symptoms while ignoring the structural injustices that perpetuate the conflict?
It's a plan to disarming the Palestinian people. And as I said, what I was speaking about the 1982 and the phase thing, it developed to what they call it the Arab Initiative of 2002, which is as well by an Arab summit. And none of these leaders at the time consider even to postpone this conference with the Arab summit to allow Arafat, who was besieged at the time in Ramallah, to attend that conference. And it went on the back of that thing, which is to create a kind of entity, a weak entity in the Palestinian occupied West Bank and Gaza Strip, and didn't emphasize in the right of return for the Palestinians. Let's go with what the French are thinking, even if we listen to what the French Foreign Minister Jean Noël Parrot called as fundamental step to isolating Hamas internationally and regionally. He called that the declaration of New York at the time when the Arabic 17 countries signed it, and some of the Arab. He said to the France Inter Radio on Friday, September 12th will be remembered as the day Hamas's final international isolation. So we can understand what that means. Hamas to them, they mean the Palestinian resistance, the Palestinian right for self-determination and to have their own territory and their own state free from Zionist kind of hegemony and security control and occupation. In that kind of possible ceasefire, they're talking about deploying what? A temporary international stabilization mission into Gaza. It means as well, plus the Zionist entity occupation, we're going to have international kind of forces in there, which is undercover. They're going to protect the Palestinian people and to provide the civilian population with support and security. We'll find ourselves under more Western occupation, since the Zionist entity wasn't able to defeat the Palestinian resistance. They want to cheat it diplomatically in such a kind of hollow resolutions.
Right, Mr. Sarchas. Well, gladly now we have Said Mohsen Abbas, political analyst and activist, also joining us from London. Said Mohsen Abbas, of course, you know, what you're talking about, the New York Declaration. Another, something very weird is about this declaration is that it calls for a two-state solution and urges Israel to halt settlement activity, and yet it fails to explicitly name or confront the ongoing occupation. What does that say about the credibility of such a declaration?
Well, it has no credibility, as with anything that comes from the Zionist Western fraternity. You have to take it with a pinch of salt. The reality is that we know that this drumbeat about two-state solution has been building up. And of course, a lot of the so-called pressure that has been building up on Israel from Western governments, you know, the token efforts that have been made, the threat to accept a Palestinian state, for instance, all these things are being touted around, but you have to think about who's doing this. There is a neoliberal Zionist soft power movement, which is hand in glove, I think, with the hard power Netanyahu sort of murderous genocidal fraternity, but is deliberately kettling people into saying, well, you know, now that you've seen what Netanyahu can do, what the hardline Zionists can do, actually come over and we'll give you the liberal Zionist solution. And the liberal Zionist solution has no intention of dismantling Israel. It has no intention of giving Palestinians the real rights that they deserve, the justice that is actual justice. They have no intention of ever allowing an armed resistance to take shape. They oppose the axis of resistance, which actually has sacrificed people on the ground. So you can see that this is just another kind of, it's a kind of another psyop, another psychological operation to try and herd the Palestinians into whatever they want. Now, if, for instance, the Palestinian resistance was disarmed, we have track records of what the Israelis do when they have a disarmed Palestinian movement. Just remember Sabra and Shatila, and what they did in the camps in Sabra and Shatila to the Palestinians and murdering the women, children. So they kill them whether there's an armed resistance or not. It's just that if there's no armed resistance, of course the Israelis can do it much more easily and they can control the Palestinians.
Said in the, with the Hague, Court of the Hague, to enable the Palestinian people to be able to force the right to practice their right of self-determination. That means how you'll be able to fulfill that. You are legally entitled to use all means to resist occupation. And we understand the international law with dealing with the occupiers. You cannot say the occupiers have the right to independence, really true independence of France. Why, when it's come to Palestine, different double standards have to be used? We have to support, and the international community going to support PA, which it didn't send one policeman to protect one farmer from the Palestinian farmers in the West Bank who's been attacked or killed, or and their land being destroyed and their cattle being poisoned or stolen by the Zionist settlers. Only it looks after the interests of the Zionists, keeps security for the interests of the Zionist entity. So this is the double standards in here. And telling the people, the PA representing the Palestinian people, I say very clearly, with the PA, with that stand and that position and that track record in the West Bank, which is the settlers from nearly 60,000 in 1993 were in the West Bank till today, nearly a million under their watchful eyes of the Palestinian authority. They don't represent the Palestinian people. And to hand the control and of the West Bank and Gaza to them and to destroy the Palestinian resistance, it flies against justice, and it flies in the face of the Palestinian people's right to self-determination.
Right. You rightfully pointed to the Palestinians' right to self-determination. Said Mohsen, I wanted to talk about this proposed transfer of authority to the Palestinian Authority without elections. Don't you think this kind of violates Palestinians' rights to self-determination?
Absolutely. I mean, they've been violating Palestinian rights from day dot. They continue to impose the apartheid state. There's no talk about neutering Israel in any way, shape, or form. There's no talk about de-Zionizing the Middle East or West Asia, whatever you want to call it. There's no talk of really giving Palestinians equal rights. It's all to do with just a backdoor Abraham Accords, isn't it, really? I mean, Abraham Accords is all about surrender. It's about capitulation. I think one of the greatest PFLP leaders, who was assassinated many, many years ago, said negotiations and these kinds of declarations, you know, you're giving us the choice of what? The sword and the neck. Basically, that's what they want. They want the Palestinian neck to be placed on a wooden stump so that the Israeli sword can fall on it as and wish how they wish. And of course, you've got the people like Abbas, basically traitors, sellouts, puppets. There are many of these kinds of puppets around the Arab world. If they didn't exist, the reality is Israel wouldn't exist for one day. You have these kinds of puppets in Saudi Arabia, you have them in Qatar, you have them in Kuwait, you have them across all of the Gulf, and that is the reason that the people are powerless, because these agencies take money from the Anglo-Zionist Empire, and then they impose torture, subjugation, surveillance, and control on their people, and they therefore shut up the Arabs from being able to say and do what they really want. And that's exactly what's happening with the PA in that region, and that's what they want to see. By pushing these agendas of the PA taking full charge, what they want is a capitulation, a surrender, an absolute subjugation, and they won't stop there. Once they have the likes of the PA, what you can guarantee is that the push for their new acquisition in the West Bank, I've forgotten what they call it, Samarra and I think something else, Judea, I think they call it. That's already on the books of people like Smotrich, Netanyahu, and and the like. They are basically already wanting to annex that territory. They want Jordan, for goodness sake. They want the west of Jordan as well. They're already pushing beyond into Syria. They want to go to the Euphrates. People need to smell the coffee. Doesn't matter what other things you say or do. Greater Israel is on the agenda, and Netanyahu is after that, and the Americans will support him in whatever shape or form they want. So you have to stop them at the root, and the root is to stop them annexing Palestine and basically marginalizing it through their puppets.
Right, and one final question, Mr. Shav, please answer in like 30 seconds because we do not have more time. Could the disarmament clause be interpreted as criminalizing Palestinian resistance under occupation, contrary to UN-recognized rights of oppressed people?
That's when the French foreign minister, Perot, told the French media, the 12th of September will be remembered as the day of Hamas' final international isolation. This is the what they want. And as I said, what Hamas, when they say Hamas, they don't mean Hamas as a group. They mean Hamas as the Palestinian resistance as a whole. Anybody who hold the gun to face occupation to them is Hamas. Or the French want to make it sounds like they are the final international isolation for them, which is they are terrorists. They want to label the Palestinian resistance as a terrorist. The Palestinian resistance are freedom fighters who are trying to liberate and will liberate their country from this satanic occupation, which is supported by all Western countries. France was one of the first countries to arm the Zionist entity with a nuclear reactor technology. They are the one who armed the Zionist right. entity before the Americans with the state-of-the-art technology from the Mirage fighters up to the cannons, to the guns, to the nuclear reactors.
Right, thank you so much, gentlemen. I wanted this conversation to go on for hours, but unfortunately, for the sake of time, we have to call it a night. It was a pleasure to have you both on this program, Mr. Saeb Shad, author and West Asia expert, joining us from Belfast, and also Said Mohsen Abbas, joining us on the 11th hour. Thank you so much for being here, political activist and political analyst, joining us from London. And thank you so much for being with us on Another Spotlight.
Try to follow the signs. That's how I live my life. 'Cause when I lead it, my heart, it all goes wrong. My journey has been on time, but only for a short while. The road that I've been on is far too long, and the picture's never clear. Take
Try to follow the signs, that's how I live my life. Cause when I lead it, my heart, it all goes wrong. My journey has been on time, but only for a short while. The road that I've been on is far too long, and the picture's never clear.
Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with verses 145.